All right, welcome to Weather and Ag and Focus on this beautiful, sunny start to your week. Wait a minute. No, it's not. It's cloudy. It's feels more like early November out there with temperatures in the 40s. And you factor in a west wind about 20, and we're looking at wind chills in the 30s out there. I want to thank everybody for joining us. I'm Chief Meteorologist Dean Wysocki, alongside with our wonderful, talented Ag Director, Bridget Riedel. And Bridget, happy Monday. How was your weekend?
Weekend was good. And yes, back to things on Monday. Pardon me if I smell a little bit like barn. I was in one before I got here.
You were where?
I was in a dairy barn.
Okay. How was it?
It was great. They had the 106 stall carousel. It was very cool.
Nice.
And honestly, I just look at the fact that this is a pretty good fall overall. I've had several people. I had a farmer this morning reach out and said, I got one more field left to do. Could it be warm again? Because I don't want to put my coveralls back on or start wearing them anyway.
Define warm. I mean, for November standards, it's going to
be. It's still warm. I think, you know, she'd be happy another 10, 15 degrees on this would be okay.
Okay. Well, that's not asking too much.
Hopefully not.
Hey, it's not snowing. Just tell her, hey, you know what? It's not snowing, so there's a bonus there. And in fact, we don't have any snow, really any inclement weather in the forecast for this upcoming week. We're looking at currently temperatures in the mid-40s, and we're not going to move much. Steady temps in the 40s today with a pretty breezy wind out of the west-northwest up to about 25. But it will be a dry day out there today. It will slowly clear things out overnight tonight, turning clear to partly cloudy. We'll drop down to a low near 30 and light winds and a mix of sun and clouds on Tuesday. And so a little more sun, light winds, and we'll have highs in the mid-40s. Wednesday, kind of a more cloud than sun scenario with temperatures in the low to mid-40s. So that's a little more closer to normal for this time of the year. Then Thursday and Friday, we'll break into more sunshine with highs in the upper 40s on Thursday, low 50s on Friday. So there you go. There's the warmer temperatures for whatever's left of harvest. And then the weekend, strong area of low pressure will be passing to our south, but I think we might get a little bit of light precip from that on Saturday, but again, that's nothing I'd really worry about. It's a pretty dry-looking forecast for the next week, even through next week. Still no signs of any cold air coming in from Canada. No signs of any big storms, which is good news. But as we head towards mid-month, we are starting to see signs of some colder weather, which might settle into the area. Not a guarantee, but I'll tell you what. I had a few people reach out to me over the weekend. Big severe weather outbreak in Oklahoma over the weekend.
Oh, quite a bit.
One died. Numerous homes just absolutely flattened. And then they had more tornadic activity this morning down there. Somebody said, "Isn't it a little late in the season?"
No,
not for the southern plains.
No,
they get their second boost October into early November. So this is nothing out of the ordinary.
Not even that late for us. I distinctly remember it. Now I can't remember what year it is, and I'm sure someone else can remember and call in and tell us. Again, that's the Red Wing Shoe Line at 701-293-9000. But I remember being up by Golden Lake between Findlay and Northwood and getting a phone call from someone saying, "What are you doing in that area? There's a tornado that's touched down." And that was in November.
Oof.
So it can happen.
It can happen. Yeah.
It is uncommon, but it can still happen.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. But much of the area picked up some much needed precip. The exception would be in Lakes Country. If you want to know what your specific area got, log on to WDAYRadioNow.com and click on that weather tab and got an article on there showing how much rain everybody got. But it was generally a third to three quarters of an inch across much of the area. So it was some needed rain. We still need a healthy amount, about another good inch and a half or so, before we can really put a dent in the dry and drought conditions in some areas. But don't see that in the cards just yet. So we'll take every little bit we can get. But again, it just wasn't quite enough.
I would agree with that. I would say we were sub half inch where I'm at in Northwest Cass County.
Yeah.
So most folks would be happy if we just got a few more days of that. We'll see when that happens.
Yeah, just not this week. So if you're finishing up harvest, this week we'll cooperate with you with dry conditions.
Good.
And eventually we'll see a little more sunshine as we head into later this week. So all in all, not a bad looking forecast, just a little bit on the dry side.
South Central North Dakota, North Central South Dakota saw some traces of snow this morning.
Okay, yep.
But I don't think we have any concern about that coming our way. I mean, it was 48 degrees when I drove through Fargo at
I see,
9 o'clock.
I see no signs of any snow. Now, there's a little upper-level wave that's coming in to the western part of the state late tomorrow into Wednesday. That might give a little flurry activity or something to the west. But, nothing that that we have to worry about. Also, mark November 15th. Well, there's two dates I want you to mark, November 15th and November 27th. So November 15th, Bridget, you're gone. And that's not why we should mark it.
But, well, you could.
Yeah, we can. So we are going to have the National Weather Service in Grand Forks is using an experimental model. It's the only place in the U.S. That is using this. It's for winter weather forecasting. And so we are going to have one of the meteorologists in charge on with us that November 15th during Weather and Ag in Focus here. And he's going to be going over, you know, how does this model work? They've already put out their winter forecast, so we'll be talking about that, kind of comparing it to what the LRC is looking at as well. But it'll kind of give us an in-depth look, a behind-the-scenes look on what this experimental model is that they're using. And is this something that could become more kind of widespread where more Weather Service offices are used? Obviously, areas in the South aren't going to, but for the Northern Plains and the Midwest, are they using this model? Or, you know, what's the success rate on it? Is this the first time they've used it this winter? Or so we'll be diving into that. And then we will have our winter outlook using the LRC on November 27th. So that's the Wednesday, day before Thanksgiving. So make sure to put that on your calendar. We'll have Gary Lezak on with us on the Jay Thomas Show right after Weather and Ag. And we'll be breaking down what this upcoming winter looks like for our area. Is it going to be a cold, snowy one or kind of up and down? And either way, let's hope we can get more moisture in here. And I was chatting with Gary a little bit this morning, and he kind of said the same thing, you know. Look, hey, he goes, look at the Central Plains and the Southern Plains. They were under severe drought from parts of Nebraska, Iowa, south into Kansas, and they've gotten some beneficial rains over the last 10 to 14 days. So he's like, hey, all it takes is a couple of good storms moving further north into the Northern Plains to kind of bust your drought conditions and really make things much better looking as we head into not only the winter, but the spring as well.
Yeah, and again, if it's spring like we've just had, that can change pretty fast, where we came into it thinking, boy, she looks pretty dry conditions for planting, and then that moved on us, right? We had some very delayed planting.
Gotcha. Well, before we go to break, we have Wade on line one, so we'll take Wade here real quick. Wade, welcome to Weather and Ag and Focus. What you got for us today?
I remember in 2017, we had our first thunderstorm in February.
Oh, that's true. We could have had, was it thunderstorm or did we have thunder snow? But I do remember we've had some very early bouts with thunder.
No, it was thunderstorm. We had hail instead of snow.
Wow. Yeah. So, I mean, it's not unheard of to get severe weather or even, hail and storms, and whether it's either late fall or early spring.
Say that again, Wade.
We had to have our shingles replaced.
Oh God!
Well, that's
from hail, I distinctly remember a February, probably prior to 2000, where we hit like 80 degrees in February. Just a 1 or 2 day deal. Yep. Yeah. So we've had some pretty interesting ones.
2012. Yep.
Gotcha. Oh, Wade, thanks so much for calling. Have a great rest of your day. Have a great rest of your day out there today. So we're coming up on break. We got to pay some bills, and we've got a special guest from my old stomping grounds down south.
Yep, and so we're going to be joined today by Grant Wiese. Grant is of Farm 640. Okay, when you hear the number 640, what's that number stand for, Dean, in farming?
I'm going to make myself look like a fool if I attempt for an answer, I won't.
You're not going to look like a fool. This is something that you're maybe starting to think of more the more time you spend with me. 640 acres are in a section of land.
All right.
And we're going to talk with Grant about tips, tricks, things to be thinking of when it comes to buying land for young farmers or anyone, really. It doesn't matter if you've a little longer in the tooth and you're considering some of the market conditions and whether or not you want to buy, maybe even if you wanted to sell. So we'll talk about that with Grant when he comes back.
Look, I got a couple of questions in the back of my mind to throw out at
him. So. I have a lot. Grant and I had a great chat on Friday on Twitter. We had a Twitter space that folks listened to. And just based off of that, we've already got some questions. So
perfect.
More for you as well.
But. All right. And if you have any questions for Grant or for us, just or again, shoot us a call, 701-293-9000. Don't go anywhere. We'll be right back.
Welcome back to Weather and Ag in Focus. And that's a good sign, a mooing cow, because like I said, I was out with some cows this morning. Now, additionally, do not forget that from time to time, Dean and I have Cassie from Great Harvest Bread Company in studio. And just because you hear us talk about her on those days doesn't mean you can't go see her at Great Harvest Bread on all the other days. Every day, she's got fresh homemade bread, all sorts of cookies, cinnamon rolls.
Oh.
And on a day like today, on Monday, some of their specials, white cheddar garlic, cinnamon raisin, onion rye, and a Dakota low-carb bread. Muffins today, oatberry oatmeal, or oatberry applesauce, and salted caramel cookies. Yes, I will take some. Thank you very kindly. So check them out. Go see the folks over at Great Harvest Bread Company. They have a wonderful product. And, of course, they're trying to source locally, just like so many others, and they do a fabulous job. So today we have a guest coming in, and I'm hoping you're all firing up your questions. Again, you can email us agorweather@flagfamily.com. And, of course, you can call 701-293-9000. That's the Red Wing Shoe Shoe Line. Joining us today is Grant Wiese, and Grant is of Farm 640. So get your Googling fingers out and go check out farm640.com. Grant, how are you?
I'm doing great, Bridget. I had chili today for lunch, and you just mentioned cinnamon rolls. That sounds fantastic. Let's mix it together.
God, that is the weirdest thing to me, chili and cinnamon rolls.
You're from Nebraska, right, Grant? You're in Nebraska?
Yeah, it's a Nebraska thing. It's a thing. If you're in the area, you just know.
When I was living in Nebraska, I thought that was the weirdest thing, but try it and you will love it.
I don't know. You will. When I graduated from college, I lived in Hillsboro, and one of the first days I went to church and at fellowship, they're like, oh, come on down, let's visit. And they would have cinnamon swirl bread with cheese whiz and sliced green pimento olives on it. And I looked at everybody and said, this isn't real food. Who thought this up? But apparently it's a specialty up there. So
that's great.
Food aside, Grant, we want to talk a little bit about your background and what you can help us understand when it comes to buying property. So please go ahead and introduce yourself.
Yeah, my name is Grant Wiese. I reside in South Central Nebraska, but grew up on a farm in Northeast Nebraska where we raise row crop, corn, soybeans. Then we had a small cattle and hog operation. I majored in agribusiness at the University of Nebraska-Lincoln and have been working as an ag lender for the past 13 years. So that's just a little bit about my brief background.
So with all of that background, that led you to wanting to start something new, something that really called on your area of expertise, you might say, and that is helping others look at assessing and buying farmland.
Absolutely. So I guess I should back up a little bit. My first 5 years with ag lending actually was in the credit and underwriting department. So I got to spend basically 2011 through 2016 reviewing farmers' financial statements. And if you remember during that time, we saw the peak of a cycle and then the downward movement within a cycle. So it was really valuable to spend those years reviewing a lot of financial statements and seeing how farmers' financials were impacted. I like to say that although I grew up on a farm, I probably learned a lot more about farming while being in a credit department reviewing financials because farms notoriously don't share their financial information. And so it was really eye-opening to get a feel for how farms are impacted financially during an upswing and downswing in an ag cycle. And I've been able to move that forward into a lending side of things during the cycles that we've been experiencing since then.
Okay, so that lends to a really great question. And we had this question when you and I, again, were together on Friday visiting, and that is working capital. Because oftentimes, whether we farm or whether just anyone is looking to make a purchase, we look at our net worth and say, looks like I'm enough valuable, I can buy something. But there's a big difference if we really can or can't. And can you explain like you did before about working capital and what that really means?
So working capital is huge for anyone, both within ag and if you're not a part of the ag sector, because working capital is your short-term risk-bearing ability. So what working capital would be, if you can picture a balance sheet, working capital is going to be in the top left-hand corner. It's your current assets or items that you have in a checking account, saving account, CDs. For farmers, it might be accounts receivable, or for business owners, accounts receivable, money that will be coming in. And then you have grain inventory that you're going to sell, and maybe livestock that you're looking to sell as well. And we're comparing that or offsetting that, subtracting it by your current liabilities. So any money that you had to borrow to raise that crop, any payments that are due this upcoming year, whether it's equipment, real estate payments, that type of thing. So we're just simply subtracting our current assets minus the current liabilities to find our working capital position. And if you're in a strong spot, that gives you a big buffer to weather hardships, both personally or within the ag sector, to be able to withstand some downturns in the market. It gives you the cash to keep working and moving and going.
So, interesting enough, how many people are good at knowing their working capital?
It's a tough one. It's a tough one. That is truly your safety net. So, fortunately for what I do, farmers are dealing with often tens of thousands, hundreds of thousands, maybe millions of dollars a year. And so we're updating a balance sheet every single year. There's plenty of individuals that maybe don't have that large of number of expenses going out the door that don't have a need to update a balance sheet unless you're applying for maybe a car loan or a home mortgage. But it's extremely important to know what your working capital levels are before making any purchase, to know whether or not you're in a position to be able to afford that purchase and not have to give it back because you can't make the payments.
Hey, I've got check blanks left. I must be able to buy things yet, right?
Is that how it works?
Right.
Yeah, absolutely.
And Grant, with the economy not being in the best shape over the last few years, is this affecting the purchase of farmland? Or, I mean, with the high interest rates, is that really not even making that much of a difference?
It absolutely is making a difference. And when you think about where we've been the last 5 to 6 years, it was an extremely low interest rate environment, historically low. That's why there were plenty of home mortgages that were refinanced in 2019 and 2020, and that's the same with ag real estate. So when you go from a 3% interest rate, 4% interest rate, up to a 7 to 8% interest rate today, you can buy a property for the same dollar amount that you could have 4 years ago, but payments are significantly higher. That has a huge impact on your ability to go ahead and make the purchase and be able to afford it and keep it and turn a profit.
So, Grant, right now, when we think about buying land, and I've gotten this question often from listeners saying, wow, did you hear the price of what that farmland went for? But I think we sometimes forget it's not that we just wrote a check for it. That buyer may have been doing some other creative ways of making that purchase, if you will. Do you want to explain what some of those could possibly be, some of the alternatives to how you can buy?
Yeah, and I really appreciate that question. And honestly, that's why I've created the website. So the Farm 640 website, I have a weekly newsletter helping individuals think creatively through these purchases so they can find an alternative way to get these properties within their possession, in particular for the next generation of the farm family. So young farm producers, there's a lot of programs out there within the USDA, which is the agriculture department within the government, to buy property with a joint financing. So you can work with a commercial lender for the first lien of the property and then with the FSA and USDA for the second lien. That allows for young producers to be able to buy ground with little to no down payment and really helps them get started with growing their ag career and taking over for the next generation. So that's just one simple way that I like to mention and bring up to producers. It's extremely important that they know about that so they can start their own generational farm.
And there are actually some first generation farmers out there. I mean, it's maybe a little harder to come across, but there are folks who are still just getting started. And so is Grant. Grant's just getting started and helping us out today. We've got lots more questions for you, especially when it comes to the tools that he can offer to people, his newsletter, and so much more. So we're going to continue that discussion with Grant Wiese. I always want to say it's Grant Wise. But he told me that's wrong, but I thought Wise was right if you're helping buy land. So we'll be back with Grant right after this. Welcome back to WDAY, Weather and Ag in Focus. Our guest today is Grant Wiese. He's of Farm 640. I almost said Farm 320. I'm like, no, that's just a half section, not the full one. So Grant's website at Farm 640 is there for you to peruse because he's got great information on there regarding his newsletter and so much more. But before we even talk about that, I've made mention of a statistic that says we're going to see 70% of U.S. farmland change over in the next 15 to 20 years. Grant, are you familiar with that? And was that any bit of a driver to help what you started with your website and your work with other farmers?
Absolutely. What's been interesting that we've seen locally is there's been more out-of-area investors that are being able to come in and take advantage of buying ag real estate. When you think about a U.S. recession, a potential global recession, we're seeing some out of area investors flock to the ag real estate as a safe haven for their funds. So it's really hard for young producers or frankly anyone within agriculture to compete when you're talking about someone that maybe has millions of dollars of cash sitting around. And so I'm fortunate enough that I've experienced a lot of ag purchases in my short career, working with about 50 individuals on a regular basis and doing frankly a lot of real estate transactions. And none of those purchases are really straightforward. There's a lot of different ways that you can buy real estate. And so I'm able to use the website to share a lot of case studies of different ways that you can buy real estate and get creative to get into this ground without maybe having to compete against some of the investors that are out there.
And Grant, are you noticing a decline in farmland purchases from just, mom and pop opposed to corporate entities or overseas entities? Is that becoming more and more of a concern?
It is something that's out there. What I do think is interesting is very few of the land transactions that take place are actually public. So if you talk about maybe 25 to 30% of the actual ag land transactions going through some type of a realtor, being a public auction or a listing, and you have 70% of these transactions that are taking place from family members buying each other out, maybe private purchases from a landlord. So there's a lot of different land that moves that we're frankly just not aware of, that's just kind of hiding in sight, so to speak. So while we do see the competition for maybe these publicly listed properties increasing, there's still a lot of opportunity out there if you have the right network and the right connections with your ag advisors and ag experts to get some ground bought.
So let's talk about those experts, Grant. Who do you recommend that a farmer has handy when it comes time to making some of those land purchases? Or what some of the information, we already talked about working capital, what are some other items that folks really need to have on hand, be ready to roll when it's time to make that purchase? Because sometimes it happens pretty fast.
It does happen very fast. And I would make sure that you have a good comfort level with a local appraiser and an attorney and maybe a realtor as well. Maybe a realtor that's not in contact or associated with this transaction. So appraiser, obviously, you'd like to have an idea of what the ground is worth. An attorney can really help you if you're going to buy the ground creatively, be it a 1031 exchange or maybe drawing up some type of private contract to get the ground bought a little bit differently than how it's being sold. And obviously, you'd want to have a good lender in place who has a couple different avenues to help you get approved for financing. You don't want to be a one-trick pony out there. You want to be able to buy the ground in a few different ways and be as creative as possible so that the financing terms that you get the ground bought at fit your 5-year goals, your 10-year goals, your operation goals. You don't want to put financing in place that's really going to restrict you for the long term, because there's a lot of different areas within the ag operation that upgrades need to be made. So you want to be as flexible as possible.
So let's say you've got someone who signs up for your newsletter and they've been following along and they've been looking at your website and reading the case studies and they have a decision to make on whether or not they should be buying some property. Are you willing to give the yes or no on it, or are you just willing to give the here's the things you need to consider before you do it?
Well, if I'm working with you directly, then I'm helping with the yes or no. But fortunately, coming up here later in November, I'm going to be selling the Farm Buying Toolbox off my website. So what that does is it's going to give you as many tools as possible to help you get the ground bought. So what's within the Farm Buying Toolbox? It's resources to help you understand your financials, to improve your financial position, and then finally to get you positioned in a way financially to be able to buy farm ground. So the toolbox has those resources in Excel spreadsheets. I have video trainings in there, and then a lot of different PDFs and documents to help you understand where your financial position needs to be when you're going to buy ground. And frankly, a lot of those case studies are included in there as well. So when you do come across a property, you have a lot of different ways to approach it and think about getting that ground bought. And that toolbox will be available later this year to try to help as many people as possible. My goal is to at least be impacting or helping 50 farmers this year, at least have the resources necessary to get ground bought. And that'll be coming up. And you can sign up to gain access to that and be notified when that's available on my website.
And Grant, approximately how many, or like percentage-wise, of people that get a hold of you that have not had any, they have no experience in farming, or but they, hey, you know what, I want to buy some farmland.
As an investment?
But yes.
Yeah.
Correct.
Okay.
Yeah. And what advice would you have for first-time buyers?
First-time buyers, that's a great question. So there's a number of things I'd suggest that you do. You've got to build that network of ag advisors. So there's a lot of different things when it comes to investing in ag real estate. It'd just be like if you were to buy a commercial property that you're going to rent out to, you know, in the downtown of your home community, or buying an apartment complex. Mm-hmm. You need to know the finances. You need to know how the money comes in and out. You need to have your agronomist, your seed dealer. You need to have a tenant to farm the ground if you're not going to be doing it yourself. So finding a local expert to network with is definitely spot number one. And let's be honest, agriculture takes a lot of money to get going. So you're going to need a good lender in your corner, and you're going to need to save up some money if you're looking to get ground bought, because it's not easy to do. It is expensive. So don't jump in blind. Definitely make sure you do some work and research.
Well, absolutely. And one of those questions about doing your homework and research, when it comes to buying cropland versus pasture land, do you have folks look at those differently in any way, shape, or form? Or do you just look at it as a piece of ground and take the same steps no matter which one it might be?
Well, if you are going to be renting the ground out, it would be looked at somewhat in a similar manner. But if you plan on producing the income yourself, very different. I personally am focused on the row crop producers. That's kind of my area of expertise. Even though I grew up on a small feedlot and an ISO wean to finish hog operation, I would not be able to give good advice as far as the financial side from the livestock standpoint. So they are treated very differently if you're going to be raising the crop or inventory yourself there.
And got to keep that in mind, you know, what you're looking for in that land. You know, one of the questions we had last week was, does it matter if the land has, you know, what comes back in soil tests or anything to do with soil health? And I think you said really you want to direct people more towards the productivity rating. And would that include what happens in a soil test or anything like that for cropland?
Soil test, yes. It is important, but like I kind of mentioned last week, you'd rather see what the overall maybe APH for the field would be, or how well it can produce, because soil tests can be a little bit deceiving at times as well.
Well, I realize that everybody's got to take a good look at it before you decide if that's the leap you want to make for that particular item. So Grant, is folks are thinking about whether or not they should work with you and things that they should be asking, how do they reach out to you and how do they get to be a part of your newsletter and so forth?
Yes, absolutely. So my website, farm640.com, farm640.com would be the number one place to reach me. You can sign up for the newsletter there. There's also a tab where you can sign up to learn more about the Farm Buying Toolbox that'll be coming out later this November. And then also I'm on Twitter, so at GWeezyFarms. You can find me on Twitter, and there is actually pinned at the very top, there's a survey that you can fill out to also sign up for the Farm Buying Toolbox and information around that. So a number of different ways that you can connect with me and just learn more about what I have available for you to help get some ground bought.
And Grant's not just a guy who can help you with that. He's a farmer as well. So he understands what it's like to be in your shoes and try to make some of those buying decisions. So any last advice, you know, from a guy who's doing this himself as far as farming, what would you say to somebody else who approaches you and says, I'm thinking about a new land purchase?
Well, it's definitely a lot of fun to be involved with the lending side of things, but then also the farming as well. So I've been able to take part in these transactions myself, both from an FSA joint financing standpoint. I've done the 1031 exchanges. I've tried to acquire ground through landlords as well. But the biggest thing is to always be a learner. So always be willing to invest in yourself, keep asking questions, and just keep getting better every single day.
And Grant, before you leave, so Bridget and I were curious as to the portrait behind you. That is a gorgeous, gorgeous wall hanging there. Where's that taken from?
Thank you. That is a very, very cheap canvas that I think you can buy on Etsy for like $15. And then I built the frame. My wife bought that for me, but it is of the Grand Tetons. So if you send me to a beach or a mountain, I'm probably going to vote for the mountains. So I'd rather go there. But a little something for my wife.
Awesome. Awesome. That looks
very
great.
Cool. Thanks for joining us today, Grant. And we hope you get lots of responses to folks curious what you're talking about on your website and your newsletter. I'm signed up too. So
I appreciate it. Thanks for letting me hop on with you today.
Excellent. Okay. We will be back to talk about headlines and weather as well.
Sounds good. We'll be right back.
There's a party. Here's Bridget in her blender. Glad she could make it.
And welcome back to Weather and Ag and Focused. On this Monday, November 4th, the day before Election Day, whatever you do, make sure to get out and vote tomorrow. If you're not happy with the way things are or for whatever reason, just get out and vote. It's not a lot of work to do. Yeah, you might have to wait in line tomorrow, depending on what time you go, but maybe it's all worth it.
Yeah,
it's all worth it.
I always figure if you don't vote, you can't complain.
Well, you can complain, but you have no right to.
So let's go right. Vote. And there's a lot of things that are going to be pretty hotly contested. Measures on the ballot, as well as the overall election. So there's a lot at stake.
There really is.
Yeah.
There really is. So, again, if you have any questions for us before we're done here, 701-293-9000. That's 701-293-9000. Let's hit some ag topics, Bridget. We've been, it's Monday. We might as well get some of these out of the way, right?
Absolutely. So the American Soybean Association wants to provide a student interested in agriculture with a college scholarship to kick off their education. The Soy Scholarship is a $7,000 one-time award presented to a high school senior who will pursue a degree in agriculture at an accredited college or university for the 2025 to 26 academic year. And so those applications are due by December 31st. If you are interested, if you are a parent or a grandparent who's a member of the Soybean Association, and if you have a student who's going to be graduating, you are more than welcome to send me an email, ag@flagfamily.com, and I'll share the link for you to apply for that scholarship. But $7,000, that helps. Puts a little bit of a dent into getting things kicked off for school.
Good deal.
Yeah, I'd say that's pretty much worth it. I'm looking now also at the fact that, you know, the folks mostly, when they want to talk about climate change, et cetera, talk about greenhouse gases, and methane is often the one that gets talked about the most. Methane has about 24 times more potency than carbon dioxide on a 100-year time scale, but it's more than 80 times more potent on a 20-year scale. We can rehash whether or not we believe in greenhouse gas and changing climate. That's not the point. The point is when the finger is shoved in the direction of cows, that they're the problem with methane. Actually, it's probably more likely to be coming out of your break room refrigerator at the office because of food waste. When you look at how much is going on out there, right now, food waste makes up about 24% of landfill material and is responsible for 58% of landfill methane emissions. So
really?
There's a reason why our very kind-hearted Sophia at the front desk goes through the fridge every so often. And that's really where a lot of our methane emissions can be coming from.
So it's not the cow farts that our politicians had us believing in for all these years.
Really has a lot less to do with cows and a lot more to do with what I see, what we're doing as humans, no doubt.
Interesting.
It's very interesting to watch.
Wow. Now, I heard Minnesota soybeans, they're going to somewhere overseas, which is
Yeah, which
news.
Is kind of new. So one of the things that the soybean checkoff dollars helps to do is look for new market opportunities, and that happens across the U.S. as well as in multiple states. Minnesota Soybean and Soybean Research and Promotion Council. I know they have a longer name. I had to look for what it was. They looked for a potential opportunity overseas, and they found one in Uzbekistan. Uzbekistan has a distinction of being double landlocked. I mean, it's not only landlocked, but surrounded by landlocked countries. And so with everything that's happened with Russia, Ukraine, and the instability in that region, it hasn't been very easy to move soybeans to them. But yet, Uzbekistan has been ordering Minnesota soybeans. They like the meal, to be perfectly honest, because there's a lot of poultry producers around their two most major cities. And because of that, they're able to find ways via mostly rail after the soybean meal is shipped over on ships to a port. It's actually the port of Georgia, and or Pote, Georgia. And from there, they are going to be moving by railroad into those other smaller cities. So we're seeing soybeans going a lot of places. Actually, coming up here in the next couple of weeks, we have a guest coming on who's going to talk about the Soybean Nextile Challenge. It's a textile made from soybeans. And how is it being used in a design challenge? And I have a million questions.
Wow.
Like, how is it coming from the oil? How are they making the textile? How do the students work with it? Because it's actually a scholarship program, this design deal. If they win, they win money. So where is it coming from? How are they using it? I'm very, very curious. Is this like a jersey material? Is this an outdoor coat? What are you going to do with it? So we'll find out.
Interesting.
Yeah.
And the Mexican president wants the country to eat and shop differently. What is going on with that?
So Claudia Sheinbaum is the Mexican president, and she has pledged to bring back the government stores. Government stores really specialized in white corn for its people, as well as soybeans and coffee and cheap chocolate. So this is kind of interesting. She wants them to rely on themselves for their own food production. There's also a big argument going on about how the Mexico is arguing whether or not to be bringing in more corn from the U.S. The corn they bring in from the U.S. is yellow corn. She's talking about white corn that they want to raise that's used for their tortillas. There's a difference. Now, also,
Where do you raise white corn at?
In Mexico.
Strictly Mexico.
Well, the majority of our corn here in the U.S. is number two yellow.
Right.
We raise yellow corn.
Mm-hmm.
And one of the other things she has said is it's healthier to eat a bean taco than it is a potato chip. Okay, that's fair.
Mm-hmm.
But the most popular way to eat beans in Mexico is refried beans. That starts with lard. So when she talks about better health and using their own food, I have much deeper questions in regards to that. Also, 84% of Mexican households use an instant coffee. But their preference is to go get really nice freshly ground coffee from modern grocery stores and then to go to modern coffee shops. But you can only do that in urban areas, right? It's not like every village has a coffee shop. So there is a call for more coffee production in the country. What they are fighting is some of the discussion we had regarding avocados, where they have trouble with the cartels owning some of that land and interfering.
Right.
Yeah.
Well, and when it comes to white corn, I mean, they're not the most fertile land down there, obviously.
Not always.
It's pretty dry. And so is there a lot of irrigation that gets done?
There would have to be, and there are subsistence farmers. There's oftentimes you have much smaller farms and smaller areas. That's where the avocados are grown, the coffee, and the chocolate beans, et cetera.
Okay.
Now, if someone has lived in Mexico and farmed down there, I bet they have a whole raft of different information for us, and I would love to know if we have someone listening who has indeed farmed in Mexico, because I would find that interesting. You know, often we hear farmers from up in this area who are farming in South America, Brazil, Colombia, et cetera. That's very different than what you would be doing in the Central Americas, like Mexico.
Mm-hmm.
Climate's different, the terrain, what crops are going to raise, et cetera. There's quite a lot of differences down there.
Interesting.
Pretty
that's,
neat.
That's cool.
Yeah.
That's cool. Well, let's do a quick recap of the weather here because we've got a lot of clouds out there today and temperatures in the 30s west of the valley, upper 30s and near 40. And we're still hanging in the generally the mid-40s across much of the valley. And we're going to see those steady temps for the rest of the day with a lot of clouds around. A little bit of a breeze out of the west at about 20, 25 miles an hour, adding a little bit of a chill to the air. We'll turn partly cloudy overnight tonight, and we'll drop down to a low near 30 with light winds, and light winds tomorrow under partly cloudy skies, mid-40s. Much of the same on Wednesday, a mix of sun and clouds with highs in the 40s. System will be pulling into the northern Rockies and then diving into the central Rockies Tuesday into Wednesday. That could give a little light precip to the far western part of the state, but that's diving south and out of our area. And then as we head towards the end of the week, we'll see more sunshine for both Thursday and Friday, with highs warming up into the upper 40s and back above normal into the 50s as we head into the end of the week and into the upcoming weekend. No cold air in sight. Or snow either. So for Bridget, myself, I want to thank everybody for joining us on Weather and Ag and Focus. Don't go anywhere. Jay Thomas Show, it's coming up next.